Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, it's a CeFi space. Luna went up. Now what? Let's take a listen.
Hey, Cedric. What's up? Are you a casino owner?
Oh, yes, I am. I've been.
how many NFTs did you end up getting?
A lot or a little bit? I'm not going to take a huge risk on it. I got like four of them, I think. Four or five. But yeah, I mean, if it works out, it's going to work out either way. You know, like, I don't need it to – I'm just speculating on it. And if it does comp with something, then it would be pretty significant regardless. You know, I'm not going to go crazy there. It's risky.
Yeah. It's centralized, so there's always that risk of, the company going under or who knows what.
Yeah, and I'm not crazy about the fact you need a VPN. I mean, I – just for the simple fact that it's kind of like you could – where I'm from in Jersey, I mean, you could bet, you don't need to do something like that. You could just bet legally, you know what I mean? But I understand why it's needed and wanted. I'm not a gambler. I won't be using the app personally, but yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, we're just referring to that 777S NFT sale going on Nowhere, which is one of the NFT marketplace on Terra. And we interviewed those folks regarding some NFTs that they're selling that gives you fractional ownership essentially in a part of a casino essentially, which is connected to like a larger casino, and it's like a white label setup where these guys are just sort of relabeling a URL and then like directing traffic through crypto wallets, MetaMask, and Terra Station, and people can gamble and then make like revenue from the gambling yield of that casino. So it's an interesting little project.
And they haven't even done any marketing yet. And they already, I think they did 40,000 this month, and the 1,000 holders got to split $8,000. They could easily do 100,000 in revenue. If there's only, 1,000, I guess each person would get their money back, $100. So it's a pretty simple way to make some money. The NFTs only cost 100.
Yeah, the NFTs aren't bad looking. I don't know how original they are. Do you know if they're like a copy paste type?
No, I feel like I think he said that they copied off someone on Ethereum. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I thought I heard him say that. So anyway, it's the 77S on Nowhere. We interviewed them yesterday, and Cedric bought a little bit. I haven't got any yet. the research would probably be just listening to our spaces from that night. But anyway.
I wanted to pose a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a liquid supply of Luna at, I guess it's at 97 million. If it continues to go down, which I expect it will, obviously they're going to need to pump the price up. Like, the price is going to need to pump because that's the only place we can create UST from is from Liquid Luna supply, correct?
Yeah, well, yes. So you have to have it. Now, you could unstake it and burn.
Exactly, right? Yeah. You could unstake your Luna or TFL brings it in. But if everyone stays staked, let's say the demand's going to stay constant, let's say, and we continue to dwindle down, like, what are we seeing happen? Like, we're coming down, like, say, let's say next month we're at 50 million, you know, circulating Luna. Like, what happens?
Yeah, well, for right now, the UST arbitrage is fairly lucrative. So, like, for example, one could borrow off Luna, send that UST out, and buy something else with it. Say, for example, you could buy USD direct, actually, like on Coinbase, like I showed yesterday. So, like, $1 million worth of UST would basically net you instantaneously about, well, it says 4,000, but let's assume it's like 3,500 once you're done, sort of like, you know, transferring things around and who knows, paying for fees or any kind of slippage involved. But it is an interesting, it is an interesting setup, and Coinbase usually quotes you the actual likely, like, final price that you're paying, or the final settlement amount, as opposed to like an AMM, which you could have additional slippage. But it's interesting. Yeah, the arbitrage opportunities are out there for people who want a fairly low risk way. What you need to do to accomplish them are you need to be on an exchange that has the like ability to convert direct to USD, or possibly even to other stable coins. You might even get a better ARB. So, for example, if USDT is cheaper, like UST is more expensive to the upside, then you could sell in one direction, wait for the price to settle, eventually get back your UST, and then come back to Terra. So that's basically the magic of arbitrage, and it's a pretty low risk strategy. You just need to find yourself a series of exchanges in which to accomplish this task. This is sort of what is happening with the Curve pool. Doe and LFG obviously announced that, you know, because the price of UST on Curve is like $1 or more, then what they're basically doing is they are burning Luna, selling the UST, pocketing the arbitrage profit in the form of buying BTC. So simultaneously, the BTC reserve of the LFG pool gets bigger, and simultaneously that creates some selling pressure of UST, or basically in the form of diluting the market with more UST in order to bring down the peg. But right now it is expensive to buy UST anywhere. So be aware of that. If you are trying to onboard to Terra right now, and you're basically converting dollars to UST, it's going to cost you a bit more, like on the order of 1%. So what I might consider doing in that context is, you know, you could either not worry about it, or you could basically buy Luna directly with USD where it's available, or whatever your native currency is, and go direct to Luna and then transfer to Terra Station Wallet. Might be the better opportunity. Now, again, these are all like issues that are much more relevant to very, very large, you know, maybe more like not whale size folks, but like, you know, $10,000 plus, where these kinds of monetary amounts become perhaps more relevant. So just something to keep in mind. Just watch out for the price of goods.
Can we, like, follow the paper trail of this Luna demand? I mean, like, USC demand? Like, where is most of it going? Like, I know they just added Aave, which is huge. Like, who's buying up all this Luna, like, UST?
Yeah, well, there's UST being bought up, as far as we can tell, just sort of everywhere. Aave is one of them. Exchanges, for reasons that are not fully clear. Maybe it's just because of global global demand for stability in there may be just like people exiting to stable coins to some extent from different assets. Right now, of course, the Tether Bitcoin dominance chart, if you want to call it that, the amount of Tether compared to how much BTC is out there is, of course, relatively high. That's usually the case when BTC's price is low compared to an all-time high. There's plenty of stablecoins sitting around to pour into the more volatile cryptos right now. So I think the probability of upside is super, super high. I'm still not a believer in the FUD that crypto is going to be considered a risk off sort of situation. It's going to be considered a risk on situation, and therefore people are going to sell off their crypto. Like, I don't know about you, but like, I bought my Atom at like $10. It's at 30 and it's netting me 15% yield. Like, there is no asset how many assets in the like corporate stock market space are performing that well? Like, practically nothing. So I would say that actually crypto, when purchased dynamically, is the absolute most risk off thing that I could possibly do with my money. Actually, I would say like the CNBC crowd is largely full of morons. I wouldn't follow anything that the media or what's written says. They don't know what they're doing.
Talking to a big investor guy, and he was telling me how like everyone's getting beat it down. Like, the Luna community is so spoiled right now. It's ridiculous.
But yeah, you're right, Cedric. Like, compared to all the other assets on the planet right now, like, we're basically pulling 100x as we speak, essentially.
So my last question for you, so let's say I have UST, right, and I transfer it to KuCoin. Let's say it's $1,000, and then I go buy Bitcoin with that UST. Does that UST like then go to Mint Luna again? Like, where does that UST that I swap for Bitcoin? Like, I can't understand the mechanism. It might be a stupid question. But if I swap UST for Bitcoin, what happens?
So UST is still sitting on that exchange, right? So any UST that's already been created on the market, burned from Luna to UST, is just floating around. So at that point, if lots and lots of people come to, say, for example, a Coinbase, and Coinbase is like, well, we have too much UST on our on our balance sheet right now in our treasury, and we see that Luna's price is down, they themselves can actually convert UST to Luna to buy Luna cheap and exit their UST. Right now, I would be shocked if a lot of exchanges are doing this. Like, it's so hard to get UST right now that the reality is that it's just in demand everywhere, would be the most obvious situation to play out. And most likely, if you were to do exactly what you just said, you take your UST to, let's say, a Coinbase and you bought Bitcoin with it, most likely Coinbase is just going to hold on to that UST at this point because they themselves, their market makers, are not able to bring UST down to peg. So until it actually is in a situation where UST's valuation is less than a dollar, there is no actual reason for, say, for example, a Coinbase to do anything with UST but leave it sitting there, right? So that's, you have to think from the perspective of like the market makers who work for Coinbase or Coinbase themselves or whatever other exchanges. Those people are there to restore PEG, essentially, so that the customers on those exchanges get the most, they get the best possible transaction from a customer service perspective, right? Like, that's the purpose of market makers on exchanges, is to provide either via Oracle feeds for most other assets, some sort of reasonable, slippage-free transaction is what they're trying to achieve for you. So this is why, like, Oracle's like Chainlink are used. Chainlink is used to sort of bring a concept of a price average across the world for BTC, and a mixture of cross-chain arbitrage plus Oracle pricing helps everyone figure out how to bring the peg back to, or have some consistency between one exchange and the other when it comes to this. Like back in like pre, you know, like before maybe 2018 or so, it was very, very common for multiple exchanges to have different BTC prices. Bitcoin would be like in the $3,000 to let's say $10,000 range. And it wasn't uncommon at all to find like $200 variations. And the only thing you had to do to make money in that situation to buy low and sell high is you just had to have membership in lots and lots of exchanges where you actually had cash parked ready to sort of buy low on one exchange and sell high on the other. And then just kind of wait or transfer that money to a wallet once you've sort of like, you know, gained that profit. So the ARB plays have narrowed down considerably with a lot more professional ARB players in the market. And those players are now in the UST video game as well. And that's how this plays out. Does that make sense, Cedric? Like, you understand where your UST is going now? It's probably just going to sit there on Coinbase if you use it there.
Definitely does. Thanks.
Money Life, you had a comment or questions or took here?
Yeah, I was just going to say, keep talking. We hit 102. So yeah, just keep talking.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah, like shocker. Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk except he's dropping alpha.
Well, these are the kind of techniques. So anyway, the topic of this discussion was really like for people maybe to ask some questions about, you know, where things are going and what strategies you might have within Terra to deal with the situation of price going up, right? Because technically speaking, you're least excited about buying Luna when it's going up and you're most excited about buying when it's going down, in theory, right? Like, people in this space by now should realize this. You're not supposed to be necessarily just purely chasing all the time. You need to have like some technique as things go up, and we can kind of maybe cover some different ideas of what you could do. But let's see if we can get some of these questions answered before we move forward. Philosopher, any points there?
I kind of got cut off when it was transitioning me to speaker. But
I was just going to say, do you have any general points or comments, questions?
I guess I just had a question. So I have a wholesale life insurance or something like that. I got kind of talked into it by some dude when I got out of college, didn't really know anything. I was waiting until it got to the point where I could have all of my money back to close it. And I was going to do that. And the person said I could just borrow off of it if I had some other use for my money. And I was looking
at that. That's what you would do. There's no reason to get rid of your life insurance policy, especially if it's a universal life, because it basically is an investment vehicle. And you wouldn't really want to get rid of it because it's, if something happens to you, that's essentially tax-free income for your now or future family. So I wouldn't mess with it. If you're already sort of like vested in that or whatever you call it, you might want to leave it. Now, if you're in a situation where you're having to pay into it and you don't believe you need life insurance, that's a wholly different issue. But yeah, you can borrow off it at the low interest rates right now. And technically speaking, you can even have certain scenarios where you can pay back the borrow with the actual policy remainder of money also. So you can essentially borrow off it, park it in Anchor, and then pay back the loan with your Anchor yield or something like that. So these are all strategies that are out there. But Hutch, yeah, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question. Do you know what company it's from?
It's a Northwestern Mutual.
Yeah, so of the whole life companies,
I would say Northwestern's, and Hutch might comment further, but they are a reliable, secure company.
That's exactly right. So of the big mutuals, it's not like the highest performing, but what it is it's just really, really steady. So it's a decent ingredient. Like if we were talking in car terms, it's not like a Tesla per se. It's like the highest model, call it Honda Accord or Toyota Camry. It's a reasonable policy. And the thing is like the first years are the worst years. So you've already kind of done that. And like, how many years have you had it?
I just hit like probably 4.5 or 5 years. I basically just got to the point where I can start to borrow off of it.
Right. Well, no, that's actually not true. You can borrow off of it before, but you're hitting the point where you should be getting close. Well, it depends on how the policy is designed. You're getting close to where you're there's a couple break-even points. There's a break-even point where like all of your money you put in is there. And I don't, usually Northwestern guys don't design the policy the best. And so that may take a while, but what you are at the point of is you're at the point of to where every premium dollar you pay, you're going to get more growing in the policy than what you pay into. So it's almost like in real estate terms, you're cash flow positive. And, you know, people are like, well, I just want to cash it out and whatever. But the fact of the matter is like what's done is done. The damage is done. If you cash it out now, it's like you've already lost all that. And you may not see the relevance of it now, but as a tax tool alone, like forget the growth stuff. As a tax tool alone, we call life insurance policies like a synthetic Roth. And with the way they're printing money, they're going to need to come back and tax the shit out of us. And that is actually a legal tax shelter. So,
yeah, like I have a specific system. Yeah, exactly what he's talking about. And I basically the growth that has been made on that essentially is tax free like a Roth. And ultimately, when the vast majority of that gets paid out as life insurance, essentially tax free as well. So it's meant to be partly an estate management tool. It's partly to be a possible collateral in the future for you to use either for emergency or for arbitrage purposes.
Yeah,
and now the anchor earn is a great arbitrage using the borrow off your life insurance compared, you know, relatively speaking.
Well, all of my crypto, like all of it, I borrowed against whole life policies. I don't have any Northwestern, but I borrowed against whole life policies to acquire it. And I'm essentially getting positive arbitrage on the insurance part. And so even if, like Seffy said, you borrowed against it and then you just put it in anchor earn, you're going to get positive arbitrage and you have this whole extra thing compounding for you in the background. Like in anchor terms, the little green number, it's going to get a little bit better and better every year. But right now on your premiums paid, you're probably getting somewhere between 0.5% to 1% in green numbers, like net borrow rate on that policy, in addition to whatever you get on anchor. So I'm going to give you a little hack, a little trick. What's the total cash value? Are you up to 25,000 yet? Do you know, or close?
No, I don't believe so. It's pretty, put a whole lot into it.
Okay.
So it's probably about like 12 or 13K of net positive, like money that I can pull out and borrow against.
Right. So you can borrow against the policy. What I was going to say is once you get to 25, there are turnkey lending programs at banks where you can get the borrow rate down and expand that arbitrage further. So like generally on these policies, and I think Northwestern's, it's their rate is
actually, you'd want a fixed rate before the Fed raises rates though, essentially. So like if you're going to do anything like this, now would be the time. There are definitely banks that work with, they're essentially external banks that will do this for you at a probably better rate than Northwestern themselves, but that just gives you some strategy.
It's true, but he's not there yet. He doesn't have enough to qualify. So he's pretty much you're pretty much stuck with the Northwestern loan. Here's what I would do, man. I would ask your agent. You still talk to the agent that sold it to you?
Yeah, I just had a meeting with him. That's how I found out that I could borrow against it.
Perfect. So have them go over it's called an in-force illustration, or an in-force ledger. Have them go over that with you, unless you can just like look at it yourself. And like Northwesterns are all black and white. I've seen them a million times. Look at the premium, look at your total cash value. It is what it is. It's less than what you put in there, but just look what it is this year. And then look what it is next year after you pay the premium, and then subtract that number by the amount of premium you paid. If you're cash flow positive, you probably want to stick with it. And if you're not, then maybe it was just designed so poorly that maybe you do want to cut bait and call it a day. I will say that whole lifers or whatever, they're kind of like Bitcoin maxis, you know, like angels in heaven will cry if you cash it out or sell one Satoshi. But at any rate, it depends on how it's designed. The other thing I would ask the agent very, very clearly is where you're going to break even on your spend. So like when a policy is designed shitty, it takes 12 years, which is like horrible. And agents go try and sell these things. When we do it, it's somewhere between year 4 and year 6, depending on how it's designed. That's like the best you can do. And I realize everybody in the cryptoverse, like, why would anybody do that? But a lot of times, and like people like Seffy, right? They have other needs. They have needs to protect their family. They have a need to want to have a bucket of tax sheltered income. There's hedges, like there's a death benefit. There's also, not with Northwestern, but there's almost like a free disability component that comes with certain policies. And so it kind of adds up if you're protecting your family anyway. I realize you're not in that boat, but ask them at what year you're going to break even with the policy and see if you're breaking even year by year now on premiums paid. If you are, and that number of the breaking of the policy is at least like 7 or 8, you're kind of far enough along where I think you're going to be better off keeping it, if that helps.
Yeah, I think my plan was going to be to take enough of the money, put it into Anchor Earn to get the percentage that I'll pay back in terms of APY every year on the policy to borrow. And then yep. I'll take the rest of it and throw it into Luna. And then if I get to pay it all back sooner, if it goes up 10x from here, then I'll pay it back and keep the rest of my Luna for free.
I like that plan a lot. And I'm putting money where my mouth is, right? Like I'm doing that for a big number through my policies that I've had for a lot of years, over a decade. Here's what I love about using Whole Life as kind of like a TradFi Anchor Earn. I never have to worry about that going down. Like a Whole Life policy cash value is like AUST. It's just guaranteed to go up every day, no matter what. And so I don't need to worry about that part going against me, right? Like I know I can always manage that level.
That's been a definite overall benefit besides just sort of like the peace of mind that technically speaking, I could borrow off of it and just essentially live off of it as a retirement fund. Like I don't need to worry about, if all hell breaks loose, you know, with other elements, like say, for example, in social, like social safety nets, like you might think of like health insurance or any other form of sort of like, you know, in the United States, Medicare or anything, like even if the whole world goes under, you have something, some sort of collateral to borrow against if those social safety net things are no longer there. So it's an interesting vehicle when you can borrow against something. Fairly instantaneously too, by the way. There's basically banks are just basically like begging to lend you money off of those things because the collateral is, you know,
it's A paper. It's A paper in their eyes. It's the oldest, like Northwestern has the highest credit rating them in New York Life. They thump on that hard, but it's A paper to the banks. And the other interesting thing about it is, you know how we used to only be able to do 60% LTV on Luna and then it went to 80. With when you're borrowing against Whole Life and you get one of these outside lenders, you do 95. A bank is not going to lend you 95% loan to value unless they feel really, really, really comfortable.
Yeah, they were pretty much willing to lend me off the entire amount. But of course, I'm still employed and everything else. But still, the amount of collateral power there was pretty high, and you know, pretty easy to arb that and throw that in. Anchor Earn under UST, just like Hutch said. But anyway, we're off the beaten path on the.
One last thing, and then I'll shut up about it. I'll actually step down and listener. We still live in a TradFi world. And like, if you go to a bank to buy a house and you say your source of funds is crypto, they get spooked. But I will say this, I bought a house during COVID, right? And my down payment money came from the insurance policy. 100% they accept that. It's kind of like the same thing. Like they always want to see the source of funds. If you say it's coming from crypto right now, they're going to get spooked and you're not going to get a loan. But if you say it's coming from stocks, even if you're borrowing against stocks, you can only borrow against 50%, and then you're like right up against the LTV. They had zero problem with me borrowing against the insurance policy as far as the source of funds for the down payment of my house. So that, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've already kind of ate the bad part.
Yeah, lately I've been completely sort of uninterested in the idea of leaving, using my BTC or Luna or my Terra wallet as any kind of sort of external collateral, or even mentioning that that is a possible source of collateral if I want to borrow. There's just like, I just don't want that sort of in that public space, which is a different issue entirely. what I like about Anchor is that you can borrow off your Luna at will. You can send out UST at will, and you are essentially unbanked fully, which basically is, of course, why Luna is doing as well as it is, because everyone that uses it realizes, holy shit, like you can, you know, like it replaces all these other institutions for you to some extent or the other.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, guys. Just to let you know, it is, I can borrow up to 90% against it, and then all the APY that I pay back on top of my borrow goes back into my personal holding, so it contributes to the growth. So I'm pretty confident that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it's a pretty effective tool, no question about it, especially when you have high-yield stablecoin yield available to you. You could theoretically, like I said, you could take that and do a variety of things to dollar cost average into Luna, and then obviously you can take that yield also, and the yield on Luna is high enough also where you could probably beat the bank rate as well. If you take like B Luna and use the UST yield off of that, then you could get Luna exposure if you felt comfortable doing so. I think you would be more comfortable doing so if you have an alternative source of income that if the need were there, you could then, if there was a need, you could pay off your TradFi loan, some of the payments, if the UST output from your bonded Luna was insufficient for some reason.
But, just remember, though, it's due at death. That's the other cool thing, a loan. Like, there's no term on it. And essentially, the death benefit, the only reason they'll loan you the money against a life insurance policy, it's not so much about the cash value. Like, that's your LTV collateral. But technically, the loan is against the death benefit. So you sound like a young guy. That loan isn't due until death.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Like that's the reason why they don't mind, because essentially there's this like pot of money there that if something were to happen to you, there's no question that the collateral is good. It's truly a paper in that respect. So if people haven't used these kinds of policies, that they're not necessarily the best growth vehicle in the universe. So if you're not already fairly wealthy, the impact to your overall existence is going to be somewhat muted. But if you tend to be much more wealthy, then these type of systems can be effective as like a mixture of estate management and like collateral to borrow off of as sort of like a retirement fund if you want to do something like that. But anyway, it's just sort of like we're sort of going off the beaten path here, but maybe anyone has questions. So let's see. So really just strategic questions, I would say, was what this space was about in terms of like long-term management of your Luna or your UST or the different strategies. And like, as price goes up, you know, how do you acquire more Luna versus, doing other things on Terra and things like that. Maybe we could kind of see what different types of like strategies people have, and then maybe, you know, cover some of the things that I might do as price goes up. Vulture, any comments on that?
Hey, yeah. So I wanted to bring up something, just food for thought here. So my mum had an interview with a really established financial advisor in the UK. He's been doing it for 20 years, really heavily involved with stocks. And she asked him questions about crypto, and his reaction is pretty fascinating. There's people out there, a lot of financial advisors that completely shut off the idea of crypto because it's something new and perhaps free of the unknown. But he was basically saying that crypto is immoral, and that there's people that it's tied to obviously money laundering and crime. Yet on the flip side, he invests in tobacco stocks. So it's like, well, hang on, where does right. morals really lie? But then, you know, she mentioned that because I've been in Luna since April last year, so I'm a considerable amount up, haven't sold any. And, you know, he advised that I should sell, of course. And actually, I'm being greedy right now. And I remember, like, when I first sort of saw your profile, Seffi, and had a conversation, I brought up my sort of plan whereby I was going to swap my Luna into UST at $250, put that amount into Anchor, and sort of call it a day. But then, you know, what was a really interesting conversation that we had is that you were like, well, actually, you thought that that was a more greedy approach because of the tokenomics of Luna, and that actually, why would it not go over 250? Like, all the catalysts, obviously, that would mean it could. Just completely changed my mind on it. And it's like, well, because of all the yield opportunities and everything that you can do, and obviously now, I mean, it's getting easier, but my mindset about it is that the more difficult it is, the more opportunity there is, right? So when we have these cards coming out in the UK that enable you to spend UST, why would I ever exit? There's just no need to.
So one strategy is, imagine, so over the next 6 months, there's no reason to believe the Luna to B-Luna arbitrage situation is going to get any, like, that it's going to disappear, as an example. People seem to love to sort of sell their B-Luna for a discount for whatever reason. So as long as that remains the case, like, even if for 6 months, like between now and, you know, 6 months from now, you have, you know, arbitrage to approximately 2% a month, let's say, right? And now you have a 12% extra Luna. You know, like, if you wanted to if you wanted to kind of go into a non-Luna position at that point, it's not unreasonable to sell the ARBs over that period of time, which, by the way, are sort of like compounding as well, in a sense, because you're doing it on a larger amount of Luna each time. So let's say, you know, you got about 12 to 15% extra Luna. You could maybe park some of that into, let's say, an Anchor Earn or some other yield-bearing situation, and sort of just watch the opportunities as they come, right? Because what I think the realization is this is the reason why you can't ever really have enough Luna, is because the more that you have, the more interesting opportunities emerge from it, whether it's just using like B-Luna to UST with a portion of it, in other words, not auto-compound it to Luna, just exit it, to have UST pouring out, and you're using that for savings somewhere. Or for that matter, like, you know, take some of the UST out of that and buy yourself some life insurance or something. Again, not financial advice. But the point is, like, you could do rational things with the output of that without necessarily exiting a tremendous amount of it. And you still have a lot of the long-term price appreciation effect, if you believe that that's going to continue, et cetera. Or you could de-risk in other ways, like, for example, you know, the ability soon for you to convert your UST or Luna over to Bitcoin via ThorChain is going to be very effective, for example. So you may be able to, you know, move into some of that or whatever. So you can always, like, go into a different blockchain like BTC and have a gold standard store of value, even if you are concerned about the mechanics or some other factor related to Luna. There'd never be anything particularly, in my mind, very wrong with considering that option as well. But yeah, Donku, go ahead.
I was losing you a bit, Seffi, so I don't know if it's on my side.
Yeah,
so
Seffi's breaking up.
Oh, okay. am I breaking up?
No, I think it's a host issue with Twitter. I really do.
Oh, dang it.
you're fine now. But you're
is it better now?
No, it's working again. Yeah, it was just a quick hiccup.
It might be just positional. Yeah.
Yeah, sit on the other direction. Now that Luna is 100, you can look out of the window again. It's fine. it's that easy. I just wanted to quickly comment on that point. Two observations, right? First of all, it's very difficult, of course, what to do there. But I enjoyed kind of right now, I don't know how to pronounce your name, VLTR, right, in terms of how you approach this. I think a lot of us don't see anymore the blind number of where to buy or where to sell. It's more like the ecosystem is prepared for something else, right? It's more of, it's maybe like back then, Bitcoiners understand that Bitcoin is something different and it is sound money, however they would like to call it. So it's difficult also to say this is something to exit, because it is just prepared to go up over time, because Seffi does it better than anybody else explaining that it's just a supply shock because the supply is disappearing even with same demand. But what I would like to just put out there as an opportunity, maybe, because that's what I'm doing right now, that I'm now a crypto native, is I don't see the need to sell Luna. You can just borrow against it and just accept it as an exit position, right? So if you say, well, I have this amount, as Seffi said, that I feel comfortable with, just put it into a separate wallet, into Anchor, borrow against the UST amount you want. And if you get liquidated, you get. But if not, great, because if Luna appreciates in price, you still hold your Luna and you can borrow more and more and more over time. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a great point. Just sort of like borrow in perpetuity and never have to pay it back. So now it's like, yeah, that's a good point. And you basically immediately can borrow off of easily, like safely, you could borrow off of 50% of it quite safely, even if you didn't want to risk any of it. You still have the price exposure. And, you know, yeah, that's a great point. And if you get liquidated, you get liquidated. Who cares? Because at that point.
And you get only partly liquidated, right? So, I mean, I need to now, of course, take care of, because I don't have a day-to-day job anymore. So I need to check how do I pay my paycheck. So what I'm doing right now is, if I'm taking any yield positions out of Luna or other farms, right, I'm buying partially with this Luna, and that goes into a separate wallet. And I just use that wallet to borrow off the Luna, because I accept that I could lose it, but I will anyway just be partly liquidated, which is great. And I have there my payoff check, right? So that's it, how I do it. And I just can grow over time the position. And so I put it out there once. People are asking for maybe a video on this. I'm happy to do it. And the cool thing about this, if more people do this, the selling pressure on Luna goes even down, because nobody needs to sell it anymore at all. And as you said, Seffi, it's 80%. I mean, if you have there a few hundred Luna sitting, that's so much kind of opportunity you have in UST. You don't need to go onto full LTV, I don't know, 76.5%. Just take as much as you right now need. And then you just keep on and keep on. That's just maybe an idea.
Well, the nice thing about that, too, is that you're kind of playing with house money. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you're kind of playing with house money, right? If you're looping it through a few times.
If you've also arbed it a few times as well, and that, you know, you have like a larger amount of bonded Luna over a period of time as well. Like, let's say you don't need it right now, but this is something like 6 months from now you might need. Then having arbed into some, like, you know, free Luna along the way also helps, right? So whether you're one of the core tenets of just like a constant DCA is to just basically DCA back into more Luna, obviously, over time. So as price goes up, that's what I tend to do. I just simply use the yield that I'm already getting on assets, and then I will go and get more Luna with it. If I see a price, now remember, every single peak, every single price top is the beginning of a new scale on the way down. This is the way you want to think about this. It doesn't matter what the actual spot price of Luna or any really speculative asset is at any given moment. You have to think of it on a mathematical scale of top to wherever the next sort of bottom is. And if you use that methodology, then there will always be sort of like a discount. Why? Because the tops simply, in my mind, represent the future, the max potential at max liquidity. And everything below that is, if it's a good asset, like an asset that's designed to go up over time, like a Bitcoin or Luna, what I consider, I don't know what the right name for this is, but like non-zero assets, like Apex. Like, you could argue gold is like that. You could argue like an Apple stock is like that, right? There are certain things that the probability of them going to zero is so infinitesimally small that, like, the world would have to end, you know, for that to happen in some meaningful way. And therefore, it's like, as an Apex asset, you can dynamic DCA down, and every top represents a new sort of like opportunity to do that again. So, you know, like right now, as price is going up, you know, maybe you just sort of like, you know, either DCA into it using the UST that you're getting off of like BLUNA, or you DCA it using the income you're getting off of Anchor Earn or something like that. And you get a little bit here and there. Or you just simply say, hey, look, the higher the price goes, I'm going to shut off the DCA, right? So let's say Luna goes to 120 or 130. I'm going to shut the DCA off, and I'm just going to let that UST accumulate. And then when the next dip comes, I'm going to deploy that into that at that time. So there's different ways to, you know, do it. You're never going to be right 100% of the time. There are going to be times you're going to be like, oh my God, I should have gone all in at 90. Or there's going to be times when, you know, you said, oh, I should have sold it all at 100 or something like that. These kinds of mentalities presume that you can see the future. And I think the the technical trading people and the quantitative people have already determined that the future can't be seen. So therefore, how to optimize based on your goals and your risk management is really all that matters at that point. And there's always a kind of a way to sort of ease yourself into more Luna here and there. And you won't, again, you won't be right 100% of the time. That's fine. But let me get TTLG on for a second, then Tokir for a moment. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First of all, congratulations to everybody. Amazing, amazing day. I did not expect to see 100 so soon, back 100 so soon. Quick note, and I want to preface it that it's not a complaint or a negative, but when we talk about liquidations, I've been liquidated twice, once a while back and once recently. And the recent liquidation was from 10,000 BLUNA collateral, I got liquidated 52%. And looking into the code, it seems like there are circumstances that could lead for liquidators to sell off much more of your collateral than it's needed to get to the safe zone. So it's put a different perspective on liquidations, and I would urge folks to not assume that you're going to get liquidated 25% like it happened with me the first time. It could be much more severe. Still, I was liquidated above my cost basis, but I lost very valuable asset. I ended up
with 10,000. Why do you think that so the amount of Luna you lost, the physical quantity of Luna itself numerically, you had a very high amount liquidated, even with the current anchor code?
Correct. Yeah. It was at a price dip from 82 to 81 on Sunday, and my liquidation price was at 82. So 81, it dipped, and the liquidator got it at a premium less than 5%. So the liquidator did not make that much money. But then the liquidating amount was 5,194 Luna, which is 52%. And I've been on forums and looking at the code and digging deeper at the unit testing they've done with the code. And looks, there's no mistake, looks like there are circumstances where the liquidating amount could be excessive, could be 75% of your collateral. And I can't really explain the reason. And the devs are looking into it as well. But just want to caution that, you know, the first time I got liquidated was less than 25%, seemed very reasonable to get to this 80% usage, safe usage levels. Well, in this case, you could have reached that with selling off 2,000 of my 10,000 BLUNA or 3 or 4, not 5,200. So it was a significant loss of just a valuable asset for a miner. Minor dip in price, and the Kujira premium levels, like at 3%, were not exhausted. It's not like it was some kind of one-off crazy circumstance where there were no bids. So it just
I mean, so if you, yeah, I mean, as you said, if there is, it, that looks very unnormal, and that should, I think, also not be the case as you're saying. And if you're saying that the anchor desks are looking into that, I would take that one as the granted, because that should not be the case, as you're saying. And I'm always happy to also, because I know the folks there, they are very nice, right? So if you don't get forwarded also to me, I'm happy, because I want to understand it as well, right? So I think this is where the community can hold together. So let me know if you don't get feedback. But I think that should not be the case. Seffy, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say it's super relevant, because obviously some people have very large amounts of a borrow out, and a 50% would be pretty catastrophic. So it's, yeah, very helpful that you mentioned it, because I definitely will keep that in mind when it comes to what my safe level is. Like, sometimes what I'm doing is I'm like, so let's say my safe level is a 75% LTV on Anchor. As price is going up, I'm slowly removing collateral, you know, so that I can optimize my, you know, and I don't want to give up all my yield to Anchor. I want to be able to throw it Nexus or burn my excess collateral. But the way you're describing it, I might actually think of like leaving that LTV a little bit even safer than that, and maybe not toe the line so much, because really, like, getting greedy over a few percentage points of interest rate or something like that, or yield off of your Luna, might not be worth may not be worth the risk of like where liquidation in certain cases. Well,
did you say that usually? Yeah. Go
what's
ahead.
That now? Setting what?
Where are you sitting usually as LTV right now with the kind of new setup of 100%?
Usually as the price goes up, I tend to remove collateral and keep it at that 75% safe zone or what have you. So I'm not really going into the red by much. So if I'm getting into the red at all, I tend to provide back pretty quickly. And if I'm going to, like I said, if I don't have access to the market, like let's say I'm somewhere where, you know, my cellular doesn't work or something like that, then I will I'll definitely move some of my bonded Luna out of Nexus and dump it into there just to sort of make sure I can don't have to monitor at all.
Hey, so, TTLG, this wasn't just to help me understand, because this is really good to know. Was this liquidation during that crazy event when people were getting liquidated under 75%? Or is this recently? That's why I was just my question.
No, that wasn't that event. No, this was this Sunday, completely legitimate. I don't see any errors. That event was definitely an issue with the price, the price API, and that was fixed. It impacted somebody else from our team, actually. So we were paying close attention, and the reimbursement came through. So Anchor handled it amazing. This is very different, and it looks perfectly legit. And it was confusing because it didn't seem like anyone's benefiting from this. It's not like the liquidator pocketed some crazy premium. It just seemed like the liquidation amount, and you can dig into the code, and I'm trying to understand it. And I'm technical. I write code, but there are a lot of variables, a lot of unit testing. It's quite unclear, but it looks like there are cases where the liquidation amount could be excessive. And I'm going to try to dig a little bit into that, but definitely it's changed my perspective on the risk. It doesn't mean that there is a function that will lower your collateral or sell your collateral to the most beneficial to the borrower. I'm not saying it's against us, but I'm saying maybe there are some little tweaks or boundaries we can put where there is a happy medium where liquidators and the protocol aren't impacted, but also the borrowers are a little bit protected. So something like this, I mean, there was no reason for that. You could have gotten to the 80% safe LTV with selling anywhere between 2 and 4,000 BLUNA out of the 10,000 BLUNA that I had in my collateral. So this was this Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's strange. I don't worry about what Donkey said, but I agree with them. I think it's one of those things where it might be a one-off if they're checking into it, like he said. So,
sorry. Yeah, I send you also a message that you can reach out to me.
Thank you,
I'm very curious to just also follow up, and probably, hopefully, there will be something fixed for you.
Yeah, and Anchor is amazing. It's if not my largest, my second largest holding. I'm super bullish. So this is just a bracket and education for us. I don't want to sound in any way negative or complaining. It's very important for us to understand risks
They should pay you for finding the bug bounty, actually. Pay you back and double it.
Don't know if it's a bug. I think it doesn't
seem right.
Or whatever,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, or like, whatever it is, yeah. Well, thank you. I just wanted to open that bracket. I'm closing it now. This is an amazing day regardless. We're all learning. We're all together. And I'm super bullish on Luna, on Anchor, and just the entire ecosystem.
Cool. Tokir, did you have any comments, questions about the current discussion?
Yes. Basically the discussion that was right before that, with regards to price entries, because there are a couple of things, like they can be a lot, like usually when we think about the catalyst towards the price drive, we always have to look at one specific perspective, that why the price can go up like this and what actually drives the price. I, in my two cents of knowledge, I think it's the one of the biggest catalysts worked as how the U.S. government, the president signed executive orders over the dollar and cryptocurrencies and USDT already being under scrutiny, where we see the USD is being minted more and more. I think that's one of them. And I don't think in future, then correlated to that particular part, is it wise to actually lose the entry price? And like because it's very hard to find a low level entry, right? In any other protocol. So especially in Luna, where specifically I have experienced it in other particular trades where you enter at a lower price, you exit, and then you don't get that entry again. So just want to understand that perspective from
this is why generally my personal strategy is not to attempt to sell any Luna because of exactly that risk, that my goal is to sort of acquire more with different methodologies that might not be as lucrative as timing a perfect top and a perfect bottom, but like I know I can consistently acquire more without question, and I'm always trying to look for ways not to lose any, like you said. As far as right now, when you look at a breakout from an all-time high, you see different types of behavior in the crypto markets. If you look at the last year, multiple coins hit double and even triple tops. I kid you not. Like, look at the Atom chart, or look at it appears that I think what it is a lot of professionals are in this game. And if you look at some of the best coins, like the Cosmos ecosystem as an example, there appears to be a almost concerted effort to basically sell into retail, retail jumping in and buying at prior all-time highs where everyone thinks it's going to break out and go up. There has been sort of like market maker pressure to sell at those levels. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's becoming a more mature market with more professional traders in the mix. But you saw this happen numerous times this last year. It's like remarkable how frequent it was, and how like there were numerous times I was wrong. I was like, hey, look, I think it's going to break an all-time high and take off, and it didn't. And then you get crushed right afterwards. Famously, I did that with HTR last, maybe a few, number of months back when it was like $2 and now it's at 50 cents. So, that kind of situation has been happening repeatedly. Is that going to happen again now? I do not think so. And the reason why is this. Basically, if you look at the BTC chart, it has basically like bottomed like maybe at this general range about six times or something like that over the course of this last year. So I think we're forming a nice sort of bottom on the Bitcoin chart, with sort of like a double bottom situation at the very best, if you look at long time horizon. And therefore, I think, we know what price BTC buyers are emerging. And as a result, that results in the possibility for much further upside to both break the prior high of BTC and get above it. And as long as the total market cap of BTC is rising, of course, there's a lot of liquidity in the crypto space, and therefore it can spill into all sorts of coins and such. And I think one of the most likely, some of the highest quality projects are the ones that are going to get the maximum benefit from those moves. So that would be, in my mind, things like Luna, really several of the Cosmos ecosystem coins we don't have to really get into right now. But the point is you want to just get the highest quality things that have been sort of beaten down by the altcoin market sort of being crushed. And I think that's where I would look for sort of deals, as it were. So there's quite a few good quality projects whose prices have been suppressed quite substantially and look like they have double bottomed, quite a lot of them actually. So take that for what it's worth. The higher quality projects are the ones who tend not to test like prior all-time highs after they've broken away as much. So the most aggressive growth patterns are the ones where when the pullbacks happen, you don't even get to the prior all-time high. You're above it. Like most of the history of BTC has been that way, where like once the consolidation range has completed, buyers are not willing to let you buy back at those lower prices. Meaning, like all of us here, we have sort of like had to suffer through buying some Luna in the 90 to 100 range, having that go all the way down to the 40 to 50 range. those people that held the strong hands who bought more and have held basically have like put in their time in the market, right? And those people are not willing to, you know, there are going to be some people that, of course, become resistant. They sell because like, oh, you know what? I'm break even again. Oh, phew, you know, good for me. I'm going to get out of this thing because this is insane. Those people leave, of course. And that's why you tend to see like some selling pressure at prior all-time highs. And then once you sort of break above that, then all of the market makers realize, okay, retail is out. The weak hands are out.
Well, Sefi, I think you need to sit again in a different space because for me, you're breaking up heavily now.
No, yeah, press. For me, as well. Yeah.
Should I just drop this one and recreate one or what? Or Danko, do you want to try to create space? Let's do it the other way around.
I can do that quickly. Give me a sec. Yeah, I mean, sure. Maybe you try it again with another one because I need to maybe leave in 20 minutes. I don't want to break here then.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me try again. All right, give me a sec.
I can hear you there, Sefi. Sorry to interrupt. Just very quick there. Sorry to burst in like that. But Don Koo, I'm in the European block with yourself there. And just on your tweet there, you transferred your UST to Euro. I know you kind of addressed it, but is there anything else coming up that you'd be worried about?
Yeah, maybe let's move over and then I can address that topic if that's okay for you, so that Sefi can create his second space and then I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Sorry for coming through on that one. All right, thanks.
Oh, good, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a CeFi space. Luna went up. Now what? Recorded on Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Visit OC's What We Do page using the link in the show notes to take advantage of some of their other educational resources, including weekly meetups to discuss Terra protocols, strategies, and concepts, the Terra Luna Intel Report on Telegram, and YouTube explainer videos on Terra concepts. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
Mutation. It is the key to our evolution. It has enabled us to evolve from a single-celled organism into the dominant species on the planet. This process is slow, normally taking thousands and thousands of years. But every few hundred millennia, evolution leaps forward.
Diving through the forest, looking for the door to the portal. Said it'll take me down a corridor. I'm ignoring the warning, storing importance. The cord looks sourced from ancient coordinates. Smells like musty mutants, trust me. I've been hunting bugs since the leaves started rustling. I must be getting close, yo, the scene is disgusting. Parasitic
mutation
leeching off the country. Grab a couple samples and defy their custody. Feeding gamma rays to the beast at peak velocity. Mutating awesomely, pre-say don't wanna me. Taking all the scraps and beat them to the lottery. Always evolving to defy the possibly. These are the things that will scream irresponsibly. Feeling uneasy, these genes get them off of me. I don't mean to trip, but am I mutating properly? We are the mutants. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. Unlock the lab, it's time to do this. Breathing getting heavy, I can feel it in my arms, but I can't stop now.
Mutation.
It's an art form, don't be alarmed if you see me looking odd when I'm out on the farm. Spinning crop circles in your yard, reaching the stars. Need a way to get across, got this little
mutation.
Lets me hack key cards, scene looking like it came out the first three saws. Flexing like Rex when I mutate the precog. Leaders trying to research this genetic seesaw. Give me all the science and we'll leave you with the pre-slaw. Writers believe, they bleed these endorsements. Turning scientists into terrorist supporters. Gotta seize the spoils and release the spores. It's time to forage through DNA lore. So sink it or swim, silly Alice, take the pill and see. We're all mad here, taking over your facility. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. Unlock the lab, it's time to do this. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. We are the mutants. Unlock the lab, it's time to do this.
Channel spaces.